So last week we left off with Tony Alamo preaching about polygamy and his horribly misogynistic opinions about women. This week we're going to pick up where he's finally arrested. The compound is raided, and we're going to see how this goes. I'm Jada Smith.
And I'm Alicia Galati, and this is Two Sisters and a Cult. It is a podcast of sister cult
For your
survivors,
earballs.
for your earballs, sister
All
cult
of them.
survivors telling stories about cults and how they relate to the cult that we grew up in. We spent a lot of time last week diving into the kind of things that are very similar to the cult that we grew up in, but we'll be running pretty quickly through this version through this last part and try not to interrupt too much. At least I, Alicia, will try not to interrupt too much.
No problem if you do. I love when you get up on your soapbox. FBI agents and state police finally raided the Fook headquarters on Saturday, September 20th, 2008, as the active culmination of a 2-year-long child pornography investigation into Tony Alamo. The raid was moved up on the calendar, actually, after an email about plans for an October raid was accidentally sent to the media the week before. Yeah.
Stop sending your raid plans to the media.
Don't do that.
Same thing happened with Waco. Stop doing
Are you
that
kidding
shit.
Me?
Yeah, they had the media involved, and at one point, this is terrible, I don't think I said this part in the episodes, but at one point, they were yelling from the compound, "We need the media, we need the media," and the media was like, "We are the media, ha ha ha." Yeah, stop sending your raid plans to the media, guys.
Bad juju, man.
Bad.
When? There were armed guards, as we spoke about, regularly patrolling the ministry headquarters. However, there was no indication that the law enforcement officers met with any resistance, surprisingly. So what they went in there with was search warrants, which stemmed from accusations of child sexual abuse and the trafficking of young girls across state lines. Because you got to get them on them technicalities, you know what I mean?
Right. Same with them goddamn taxes. Like,
uh-huh.
It's just so annoying that that's all they can usually get them on.
I know. That's why I'm a little bit grateful for, like, the fact that everybody has a cell phone these days. You can. Like, we are the police. We are. We are the security cameras.
Yeah.
Anyway, an FBI response team arrived shortly after the raid started, and there was an SUV with a trailer that backed up the trailer to the front door for what I am not sure.
Okay.
FBI vehicles were blocking off the dead end road. There was a Fook School District bus that arrived and pulled up next to the 12 unmarked vans, SUVs, and sedans, which were next to the headquarters. So, pretty much, they came in with over 100 federal and state police officers.
Wow.
And, of course, Tony Alamo was not on site.
God damn it.
He was in Santa Clarita, California. But the district judge, John McCalla, who presided over this raid, said that he was concerned about the very great control Mr. Alamo has over a number of people. That is a direct quote.
Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned as well.
Right.
We should all be concerned.
We should. Only 6 kids were taken out of the compound at the time. That's not very many at all. They conducted interviews with them and put them in temporary state custody. And at the time of the raid, September 20th, no one was arrested. But U.S. Attorney Bob Balfe at the time said that before the raid, he expected a warrant to be issued for Alamo, who had a long history of tangling with law enforcement. And Alamo at the time, mind you, is 74 years old.
Oh my God, this 74-year-old motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
With these itty-bitty babies.
8 to 15-year-old girls. Nasty ass.
Nasty
chemically
ass.
Castrate the bitch.
I agree.
Funny thing, he spoke to KSLA News 24 hours before they got raided.
Oh.
He defended his ministry. He claimed he wasn't a polygamist. And then, in the same breath, he defended the practice of polygamy.
That's not how that works.
That's not how anything works, buddy. His response to more than 100 federal agents raiding his compound. He says, "We're the holiest church on the face of this earth, and these scumbags think they can investigate us. Another thing, too, they're trying to accuse me of trafficking young girls across state lines. trafficking young girls across state lines. That's the dirtiest, rotten lie that ever happened. I don't see that polygamy is a crime at all. And besides, if I was a polygamist, it's not a crime God sends people to hell for."
What?
When asked directly if he condoned polygamy, Alamo said, "God does. Are you saying God is wrong by condoning it? Moses had 3 wives."
Different times, bro. Different times.
Like, by several centuries. Just let it go.
Wow.
Let it fucking go.
Let it go.
Let it go. I'm gonna chop your dick off. Let it go. Anyway.
We remix a lot of songs on here. I really need to just compile that into an episode of like.
We should. Yeah, that would be so fun.
Singing.
During the raid, Mayor of Foot, Terry Purvis, said that he was concerned about the reputation of the town and he didn't want the community to be associated with Alamo. However, he did admit that 4 members of Alamo's organization were running for city council on the fall ballot that year.
No! Check who's running for ballot!
Precisely.
Oh, God. That's like that one chick who grew up in that... there's a Hawaiian cult, which we haven't talked about yet, but we will. But there's a Hawaiian cult where the daughter of one of the members, and she's still part of it.
No,
she
no.
She was running. You looked her up.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, I think. I don't remember her name.
Yeah, she was running for fucking, I don't know,
president for a while there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys.
Yeah. That's some, I'm pretty sure they were something close to biblicist.
Yeah,
just
they're very weird. Their leader, which this is a funny story, their leader was like, "I can't die," and then jumped off a cliff with a paraglider.
Oh my God.
That like malfunctioned. And then
that's not how it works.
And then he still didn't die right away.
Oh my God.
It took a few days.
Oh my God.
If I'm thinking of the right one. There's so many cults, y'all. Anyway,
do you know what karma means? Apparently, like, the literal translation of it is, it is your own doing.
I mean, this guy obviously like, doesn't know that. Idiots, all of them.
Jeez. So here we go. Okay, after the raid, the Sunday after the raid, which would be the 22nd of September, I believe. Services were held, but outsiders were not allowed to attend, which I guess they usually were. And on the Thursday after the Saturday raid, FBI agents finally caught up with Tony Alamo / Bernie Hoffman / sick fuck.
Yeah.
in Flagstaff, Arizona at 2:45 p.m. Thank God.
Yeah.
According to the FBI, he was arrested on a federal warrant, and he was charged with violating United States Code Title 18, Section 2423, also known as the Mann Act, I believe, which makes it a federal crime to knowingly transport a minor under 18 across state lines with the intent to engage in sexual activity that would be a criminal offense under the law of the state you left.
Oh, okay. So probably the same thing that they got
the Lolita guy on.
I don't know who that is, but I was thinking
that nasty ass movie, which I have never seen, by the way. I just know about it.
No, the guy who was arrested and died in prison very suspiciously.
Epstein.
Epstein, yeah. That's what Jeffrey Epstein. I'm thinking.
Who didn't kill himself.
He didn't kill himself. We're not even buy into that bullshit. Yeah, so I think that's what they probably were able to get him on.
Yeah.
Is this particular, what'd you call it, the man's code?
The Mann Act.
Mann Act. This bullshit.
Yeah, M-A-N-N.
Oh, okay, so it's probably some last name.
Mm-hmm.
These motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm. An hour before his arrest, actually less than an hour before his arrest, a reporter for a paper called The Signal contacted him by telephone somehow and had a whole nice conversation with him where Alamo claims that he was not on the run,
mm-hmm.
although he was in a desert location that he would not specify.
I'm not on the run, but I'm not going to tell you where I am in case I am supposed to be on the run.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
He says, I was on my way to Santa Clarita, but I got stranded here.
Mm-hmm. At this undisclosed mm-hmm. location.
In this undisclosed location. He told the reporter that he was waiting for a replacement part for his vehicle, which broke down. And sure. They had received the wrong part 3 times already. He was frustrated. Super frustrated. And then within 45 minutes, they had his ass. Boom. So glad.
Yeah.
And a girl whose name was not released, mostly because a lot of the information that I got was through the Associated Press, which does not release the names of minors who say they were sexually assaulted, even if they're above the legal age now.
Yeah, I think that there's some type of privacy act or something where if someone was sexually assaulted under the age of 18, you are not allowed to release their name. They did the same thing with that fucktard in Australia.
Little dick, little pebble.
Little dick, little pebble, yes. Where the women who came forward about that, even though they were older at that point, they used pseudonyms for them because when they were assaulted, they were children. Raped. When they were raped, they were children.
Jesus.
Not just an assault. It's a fucking rape.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty normal, I think.
So, we have an unnamed girl here who was one of Alamo's wives and a boy named Seth Kalanya who was 18 years old at the time of the trials. And these two were the first to testify against Tony Alamo. The girl says that she was kicked out and she was made to live next door in the greenhouse, which kind of reminded me of how we had like the yellow house and the staff house.
Yep.
And, you know,
like the Stewart's
Village. The lodge.
And, yep.
Yep.
New,
what was it? New Village?
New Village, yep.
New Village, Stewartsville, et cetera, et cetera. So she was kicked out and made to live next door in the greenhouse about 2 months after she moved into Alamo's house as one of his wives.
Mm.
The greenhouse was also known as the House of Scorn.
Oh, no.
And Tony would put them there for their infractions. When they were there, they would often be made to fast and only be allowed to drink black coffee or water. And fasting was also something that he would do regularly, even if they weren't in the greenhouse.
Oh, jeez.
She says that being deprived of food for 3 to 7 days was pretty common and usual. Which, honestly, actually, this came up organically in a conversation with my son yesterday, I think, where I'm like, we fasted a lot.
Yeah.
I forgot about that completely. But we did for often 3 days. Man, I used to house a whole pot of goulash after those 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
I swear.
I hated doing that. And I think that's why.
Honestly.
I think it adds, not that it's the whole reason I have other issues going on, but I think it adds to my binge eating.
Relationship with food.
Yeah, my relationships with food, in that I have a meal and I just, it's going to be my fucking last meal before I fast for 3 days. And the idea of even doing intermittent fasting, or I had a boss who would once a month, he would just fast for 3 days just to cleanse his body. And he would drink, he would drink liquids and things, or he would do a whole day or whatever he did. He was weird. But he was also religious. So I never asked him if it had to do with his Christianity or spirituality.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't tell kind of thing, whatever. But he'd be like, oh, no, I'm fasting today. And I was just like, okay. But I remember one time I asked him any particular reason why. He's like, it's good for your gut health. And I've been doing a lot of bad eating lately. And so just to kind of reset my body. And I was like,
yeah,
oh,
they do say that.
That sounds like a good idea, but at the same time, fuck that shit.
No, I hear you.
Some good food.
Fuck that noise. Miss me with that song, motherfucker.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thanks.
It's so bad. So, yeah, I think it added to my relationship issues with food.
No, I hear that. I think probably me as well, because I don't know. I try to do intermittent fasting sometimes, but nah.
Yeah.
It's just not about that life, man. I just can't do it.
No, thank you.
Nah. So yes, they were deprived for 3 to 7 days of food, only allowed to drink straight black coffee or water. And the girls who lived in the main house, which was called the schooling mission, either worked so late into the night that they slept in the school building out of convenience.
Oh, no.
Or they were Alamo's wives. So I guess he had some girls living in his main house that were not married to him, but just he wanted to keep them close and made them work late for that reason.
Grooming them.
Yeah. Nasty. Nasty. Burn him. Ew.
Yeah,
shame.
Cut off his dick.
Shame. Ding, ding, shame. Do you remember the Cersei scene from?
Yes. Ding, ding, shame. I got it.
So this girl, who's one of the first to testify at the trial, says they all wear wedding rings. They go into his room at night and close the door. And they're the only ones that do that. And she listed 8 names that she knew of. However, she had escaped a few years before the trial. So the other boy saying there's 30 of them now does make sense still.
Yeah.
So she listed 8 names, including a girl that he had legally married named Sharon Alamo. And she listed them as being, quote, the sisters in the house, unquote. That's what they called them, the sisters in the house.
I like it.
Cool. A CD was released in February during the trial, and it contained denials of sexual and physical abuse by the witnesses, their sisters, and other girls. And the girl who spoke during the trial said that CD was coached. She said, Tony told us what he was going to ask us and what we were supposed to say. The girl also described being beaten by a man named John Colbeck.
What?
Who was Alamo's alleged enforcer. He had an actual enforcer.
Yeah, he was fucking 74 years old. Of course he
did. Exactly. Yeah. Beat this kid for me.
Right?
Yeah.
God. Oh, God. What a piece of shit motherfucker.
It reminds me, his enforcer reminds me a little bit of the director's husband.
Oh. Where we grew up. Yep.
Yeah. Because a lot of the kids remember being beaten. When I say beaten, it's not like a jumped in an alley beaten. It's like, I've experienced this, so I can speak to it. It was like being hit in the pelvis with a baseball bat. Mm. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, the 18-year-old boy that testified on the same day as this girl, Seth Kalanya, he also testified that he had been beaten by the enforcer, John Kaulbach, who we will soon find out is a piece of shit. So shortly after both of their testimonies, John Kaulbach was wanted on charges of second-degree battery. They didn't find him for a long, long time, but we will get to that. At a federal detention hearing for Tony Alamo, several witnesses said that Kaulbach beat Tony Alamo's followers for even minor infractions, like playing with a spray bottle.
What? That makes no sense.
But, like, think about it. Think about where we grew up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I could see that. Although...
You feel me?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you guys are playing. That's not what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Go to the office, get your asses beat.
Yep. Yeah, it wouldn't even be so much as the playing with a spray bottle. It's more about what were you supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Former followers said that Alamo sometimes introduced Kaulbach by mimicking Jack Nicholson's "Here's Johnny" line.
Oh, no.
From The Shining.
No, I haven't seen. I've seen that part just from.
Yeah, everybody's seen that part.
But I've not seen the movie, but I read the book, and that was a terrifying scene in the book.
I bet. On October 15th, about a month after the raid, an FBI agent called the Fort Smith police, where Kalanya lived, asking the detective there if he could speak to Kalanya, who was now 18 years old and could testify as an adult. The detectives from the FBI said that Kalanya was initially reluctant to talk to them, as Tony Alamo's followers had been brainwashed and taught that law enforcement is evil. Mm-hmm. Also reminds me a bit of where we were, like, child services would come around and we were thoroughly trained
on what you needed to say and what you weren't supposed to
and what you were not supposed to bring up at all.
Yeah.
However, Seth Kalanya warmed up to the officers, and he told them that his family still lived at the Alamo compound. He described the ministry as a place run on fear, where the followers report on each other to Alamo, who decides what punishment goes where, and it's usually beatings. Mm-hmm. Kalanya, that is Seth, said that his father once chose to be beaten by John Kaulbach rather than be forced out of the church. He told the detectives that he was beaten himself over making a comment about Harry Potter after someone reported it to Tony. And as he worked for one of the ministry's businesses, and he was leaving work at the time, when a follower grabbed him, and John Kaulbach walked up, accused him of trying to run away, and then started beating the shit out of him.
Jeez.
Seth told the detectives that his backside bled from open wounds for about a week, but he said that another beating he had earlier than that was 10 times worse and left his face and his backside swollen and bleeding.
Oh my God.
Now a man named Douglas Christopher was ordered to hold down a boy named Justin Miller for a very similar beating in a warehouse that belonged to the foundation. Eventually turned himself in during the trial. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was watching what was going on, and he was like, hey, I have some unfinished business. I should probably take care of that. So he thankfully turned himself in, told the whole story, and everything that he knew, he gave them. And he got 164 days in jail and 3 years of probation.
Wow.
So reports released by the Fort Smith Police Department, where Seth Kalanya lived, showed that officers first learned of John Colbeck in 2006, where they got an anonymous call about a marriage between a 13-year-old girl and a 34-year-old man at Tony Alamo's church. John Colbeck met with the officers who got this report, and he told them that he had just performed a marriage ceremony and the couple already left the church. Sorry.
Oh, geez.
The officer says, I asked him how old the bride was, and he replied, she's about this tall, and raised his hand to chest level. I asked him if the bride was 13 years old, and he said, maybe.
That's concerning.
Yeah. John Colbeck refused to answer any other questions without a lawyer present, and he later tried to draw a distinction between a legal marriage and a ceremony, according to the report. Nasty ass.
Nasty ass is right.
During the September 2008 raid, mind you, all six of those kids, girl children, who were removed from the cult and placed into temporary state custody, all of them were found inside Alamo's house. In November of that year, 21 more children were taken into state custody during a traffic stop. Somehow, Tony and his cult keep getting wind of what the government's movements are going to be, what their plan is. So somehow they heard that the state was coming to conduct some interviews, and they tried to move over 20 kids out of the state. The court had an order to retrieve more than 100 children, but that day in November 2008, they only retrieved 20. So at this point, a few of the parents who were part of the cult were sent to jail for like hiding their fucking kids. They would send them to relatives or send them to another compound in another state. Yeah. That was also part of the ministry. Like, there was a court order for these children to be interviewed, and they were not cooperating.
Yeah.
So a couple people went to jail, as they should. Alamo also ordered the adults and teens, at his compound to obey coffee and water fasts for days at a time. When he couldn't find the person specifically who violated some rule that he had set in place. So if one person did something, everybody paid for it.
Oh, jeez.
Justin Miller and Seth Kalanya's lawyers filed federal lawsuits asking for more than $75,000 in damages in the form of physical pain and suffering, emotional distress, and scarring and disfigurement. The lawyer said while this lawsuit was going on that he hoped the people who were leaving the ministry would consider joining the suit. It's unclear whether anybody did or not, but fingers crossed. I hope this guy got as much fucking flesh taken out of him as possible, yeah. To be honest.
Especially because he was already making so much money off.
Exactly.
Of
like, he was paying himself a $50,000 to $70,000 salary a year just to keep the FBI and IRS off his back. Like, no, I'm making money. Really? Look, $70,000. I have a salary. But while he was making fucking $9 million or some shit.
Yeah.
Piece of crap. Anyway. As of December 2nd, 2008, a judge in Arkansas unsealed a federal indictment that included 8 new charges against Tony, who originally only faced 2 of them for taking children across state lines for sex. The 8 new counts were pretty much the same thing, but they involved 4 new victims, all girls who were unnamed, under the age of 18, and Tony pleaded not guilty to all 10. Of course. During this months-long trial, it was also discovered that a previously convicted sex offender, was living on the Alamo Foundation property. Had his own room with a little sign that said, like, do not enter Fred's room, you know, like, living there with members, kids. He had the perks of a full-fledged member, and he was just chilling on the property. He had previously tried to fuck a 14-year-old. So not only was Tony engaging in this kind of shitty behavior himself, he was actively accepting members of society who engaged in this behavior.
Yeah.
Now, the lawyer that defended Tony during his 1991 abuse case with the four boys and their fathers that we talked about last episode.
Yep. He didn't get any time for that, right? He didn't get any
time for that. No, he got no fucking time for that. That's why he probably hired this lawyer again.
Yeah.
As this case came up, like, the lawyer that he had was getting overwhelmed and did not want to do it. So the lawyer that he had during the 91 case took this case too. And, like, this lawyer is super weird. He has this, like, oh, Tony Alamo has been painted in the media as this monster. I want to show the world Tony Alamo the man. But, like, he's a shitty man, too. He's still a fucking monster. You dumbass. Anyway. The prosecutor during the trial for the abuse in 2008, his name was Clay Folks, and he told jurors in a court session in July 2009 that a 15-year-old girl who left the Alamo Ministries in 06 told the FBI that Alamo married her when she was at the age of 8. She told them that Alamo exchanged wedding vows and rings with her and sexually assaulted her before she was 10. Alamo summoned another 15-year-old to his home in 1994 by telephone, the authorities said, and then told her parents that God instructed him to marry her. Folks said the parents consented, and Alamo repeatedly sexually assaulted the girl, taking her on trips to West Virginia and Tennessee as he prepared for the trial on tax evasion. Another similar call came in 1998 when he married another 14-year-old girl. And in 2002, he called three underage girls into his room and shut the door, telling all three of them that God wanted him to marry two of them. He later sexually assaulted those two, who were 11 and 14. These girls also traveled on Alamo's orders to other states. Which is how they got him on that technicality. He would be traveling and call their parents and say, I want so-and-so to come help me out in fucking Tennessee or some shit. Mm-hmm. So they would go across the state lines.
Yep.
And then, you know.
Yeah.
One of these girls' parents explicitly encouraged her to marry Tony Alamo, saying that his home had access to better food, television, movies, and a swimming pool. What the fuck?
That's just like the Little Pebble, where women encourage their moms would encourage their daughters, like, yeah, it's God's will, you need to do it.
He has a pool. No, I would not fuck anybody for a pool. I would not.
No. It's so sad.
On top of him having all of this great fun stuff to lure them fucking in with, he controlled every aspect of their lives, from what they ate to who they were allowed to talk to. And when the FBI really started pulling on that thread, just the entire facade that Tony Alamo had woven around himself of being this magnanimous pastor with all of these beautiful charity ministries and all this bullshit just unraveled. Just boom.
Yeah.
Gone. Just needed a little tug, which I'm so glad he's gone.
Yeah.
All of this stuff was like, holy fuck. People lived through this. This is not just a story. Like, it's... God. Anyway. A man named Don Irvin, who was leading Alamo's defense team, told the jurors to focus on the facts and claimed that all the girls' travel came as part of the ministry's efforts to give people decent lives for themselves. He said this investigation, this prosecution, was fueled by prejudice the government and law enforcement have against Tony Alamo's church because of its practices. Prosecutors, however, spent most of the early sessions going through a bunch of photographs of Alamo with some of the women and girls from his compound. At one point, one of the attorneys asked the witness who was on the stand, who is the girl on the right wearing this Barbie shirt? And the witness said it was an 8-year-old girl that Alamo had taken as his wife. And the 8-year-old, who was 18 at the time of the trial, testified that she escaped in 2006 by dodging security cameras and guards to escape the compound. Her testimony apparently left the jurors crying and in disbelief at the things she had lived through. Tony Alamo's lawyers insisted that the girls were only moved so they could do legitimate ministry work, and they claimed that the government was targeting him. There's also the fact that he pleaded not guilty. However, defense lawyers, that is Tony Alamo's lawyers, left the sex and underage marriage claims pretty much unchallenged, like they didn't even touch them. They just tried to poke holes in the statements and like question the witness memories and whether they had been coached by their parents or the police, etc., which I find incredibly telling.
Yeah.
Another teenage witness said that Alamo married her when she was 8 and groped her after their wedding, and she said she started having sex with him when she was 9 years old, also known as a third grader.
Fuck.
He apparently also took explicit photographs of her that year when she was 9 with an instant camera, and she says that when he looked at the pictures, he called her a whore. And she said she didn't understand, but Alamo told her it was a good thing.
Oh, God.
And she said at one point she asked him why he picked her, and he said, because you were cute. So she says on the witness stand, it wasn't God's will that he married me. It was just because he thought I was cute.
Yep.
She describes 2 trips to her parents' home in Oklahoma that were cut short when Alamo decided he wanted her back in Arkansas for sex. And these trips are mentioned in the indictment and are part of the reason why he finally got fucking taken down. So on top of this trial, which when it came out, finally, all of the information they could get, he had at least 5 underage girls, all of whom said that they had married him in a private ceremony, who he took across state lines from March 94 to October 2005. So during the trial, 4 other victims testified that they exchanged vows with Alamo at times when they were ranging from the ages of 8 to 15, and they lived under his very strict control in Arkansas. And all of them had left the ministry in 2006, except for the one who testified first, who said she left in 07. Alamo, mind you, he is 74 years old, so fine, but like, fuck him. He dozed off during the trial, and his lawyer had to like nudge him awake half the time.
Oh my God.
Also during this trial, which they weren't able to get him on because they got him for 175 years on the abuse trials.
Yeah.
I mean, abuse charges. However, during the trial, it was revealed that he had been running a multi-million dollar empire that had like none of his handprints on it, but everything was going to him. So all of the followers had put all of their earnings back into his ministry, and some of them were pissed off that they didn't get any returns and testified during the trial about how his properties, vehicles, businesses, and banks, every bit of income that these things generated went to him, but they were in members' names.
Jeez.
Witnesses acknowledged multiple properties being listed in their names, ranging from warehouses, mobile homes, houses. There was a guy who lived in one place, but a home that was owned by the ministry was in his name, and it was a completely different address. Like, this dude was just all over the place.
Wow.
He was found guilty, Tony Alamo,
yeah,
on July 24th, 2009. On all 10 counts, thank God, yeah, of taking underage girls across state lines. On November 13th, he was sentenced to 175 years in prison, and he was fined $250,000. December 2nd, 2010, he had been trying to appeal this conviction, and the circuit court upheld his conviction. Thank goodness. He was also... He was
sued.
Yeah, thank you. Sued. And some former members were awarded $525 million in actual and punitive damages.
Yes, that's amazing.
And then he died in federal custody in North Carolina in May 2nd,
2017. Yes. Woo! Yes. Finally.
Right.
Oh my God, this dude. Yeah.
Fuck this guy.
I'm done with him.
Were you in a cult? Do you have a favorite cult? Is there a cult you want us to cover? Do you want to tell us a crazy mystical experience you had? Send us your stories at twosisterscult@gmail.com.
And we have a Patreon. Our weekly podcast will always be free, but if you donate to our Patreon, it will support the show and allow us to create more amazing content for you. You can go to twosisterscult.com, click on Patreon on the top menu. You can get exclusive perks like a shout out on the show, access to our top secret Facebook community. And if you join at the $10 level, you get a Two Sisters and a Cult sticker and exclusive monthly bonus full length episodes that will not be available on the podcast. Those will start going live in January.
We also have some pretty sweet merch available in our shop. So you can go over to twosisterscult.com and pick from decals, stickers, t-shirts, and tons of other fun stuff. Go to twosisterscult.com and click shop in the menu. Twosisterscult.com.
The best way for you to help us out on the show is to like, review, and subscribe on Papple. Is to like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to tell a friend who you think would like us.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Two Sisters Cult. So come hang out with us.
Catch you on the flip side.
And don't join this one. Don't join that cult. Don't.